Right, the reading this morning is taken from Ezekiel chapter 37. Now we'll wait 5 minutes while everybody looks for their place in the Bible. Right, Ezekiel chapter 37. The land of the Lord was upon me, and he brought me out by the Spirit of the Lord, and set me in the middle of a valley. It was full of bones. He led me to and fro among them, and I saw a great many bones on the floor of the valley. The bones were very dry. He asked me, "Son of man, can these bones live?" I said, "O sovereign Lord, you alone know." Then he said to me, "Prophesy to these bones, and say to them, 'Dry bones, hear the word of the Lord. This is what the sovereign Lord says to these bones. I will make breath enter you, and you will come to life. I will attach tendons to you, and make flesh come upon you, and cover you with skin. I will put breath in you, and you will come to life. Then you will know that I am the Lord.' So I prophesied as I was commanded, and as I was prophesying, there was a noise, a rattling sound. And the bones came together, bone to bone. I looked, and tendons and flesh appeared on them, and skin covered them, but there was no breath in them. Then he said to me, 'Prophesy to the breath. Prophesy, son of man, and say to it, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe into these slain, that they may live.'" Excuse me. "So I prophesied as he commanded me, and breath entered them. They came to life and stood up on their feet, a vast army. Then he said to me, 'Son of man, these bones are the whole house of Israel. They say, our bones are dried up and our hope is gone. We are cut off. Therefore prophesy and say to them, this is what the sovereign Lord says. O my people, I am going to open your graves and bring you up from them. I will bring you back to the land of Israel. Then you, my people, will know that I am the Lord, when I open your graves and bring you up from them. I will put my spirit in you, and you will live, and I will settle you in your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, and I have done it, declares the Lord."
It's really nice to see you today and be with you again. We're looking at a passage which, probably by its familiarity, gives us a sense of security, because we know about the Valley of Dry Bones. I was, 12 years old, singing alto in the school choir, and we sang "Dem Bones, Dem Bones, Dem Dry Bones" in a choir competition, and which we failed to win. But nonetheless, we're kind of familiar, vaguely familiar with the Valley of Dry Bones. The problem with the familiarity is that we probably don't really know what the Valley of Dry Bones is really about, because, you know, we think we do, but we might not do. So we're going to think this morning, initially, if that's okay with you, as the context of the Valley of Dry Bones. We're trying to put it into a historical framework, because this is not a story. It's a journey. It's a narrative. It's a time and place in history. And I want to try and put that in for you. So thanks very much. Here we go. Here's the background. We're going to start with the monarchy of Israel. Israel lived on the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea. Jerusalem was probably its main town and city. And in 1050 BC, that's 3,000 years ago, Saul became the first monarch, the first king of Israel, followed 40 years later by David, followed 40 years later by Solomon, followed 40 years later by what was virtually a civil war, in which the kingdom was divided. The northern kingdom focused in Dan and Beersheba in the north, at what we would now term biblically, New Testament-wise, as Samaria, the southern kingdom, focused on Jerusalem, with Judah as the main tribe, the house of David, became the southern kingdom. It was divided. Thanks very much. So 200 years after that, we're now into the early 700s BC, the Assyrian Empire moved across toward the Mediterranean and took over the whole of the northern kingdom, and they took the people away into exile. So the northern kingdom, it virtually just vanished overnight. And these 10 tribes just virtually disappeared. 100 years later, the prophet Jeremiah, in the Old Testament, one of the Old Testament prophets, prophesied that the southern kingdom would also go into exile. That Judah could not just pretend that everything was okay when it wasn't. But he also said in Jeremiah 29 that having been taken into exile, 70 years after they were taken into exile, God would bring them back to the land of Israel, back to Jerusalem, back to their homeland. And he was very specific. If you read Jeremiah 29, so specific on the message from Jeremiah that God would bring the people back 70 years later. So we're now up to 612 BC, Jeremiah. A few years after that, it exactly happened. The Babylonian Empire, which had taken over from the Assyrian Empire, they'd beaten them. This sounds like the Olympic Games, but it's over a much more extended period of time. The Babylonian Empire swept through and they engulfed Judah. And they took some of the people away, back to Babylon. But they basically left them, the ruling people, alone. And in that point, Ezekiel, the prophet we're going to look at this morning, comes into the picture. And he makes a prophecy that says that the temple in Jerusalem is going to be destroyed, desecrated. It's going to be just demolished. The boundaries are going to take it apart. What happens is that Judah rebels against Babylon, those that are left. So the Babylonians come again, and this time they really do a job. They take the walls of Jerusalem down and they desecrate the temple and they destroy it, just like Ezekiel said, and they take Ezekiel to Babylon. Ezekiel is now in exile in Babylon, away from his homeland. And he continues his prophetic ministry there, and you'll notice if you ever read the book through, and it's a tough read. Yeah, I think it's a tough read, but it's interesting. Ezekiel's a really interesting book. But 62 times God makes this statement, then you will know that I am the Lord. So the whole of the prophetic book of Ezekiel, as God speaks to Ezekiel, is Ezekiel is to tell the people what God is saying. The purpose is that the people would know that God is God. The Lord is the Lord. He's the sovereign Lord. That's the purpose of the book. So there are three sections to the prophecy of Ezekiel. First is the destruction of the temple. You read that in the first third of the prophecy of the book. That's done. The second is he prophesies, interestingly enough, to the nations. And he says to Babylon, don't you think just because you're strong now, it's going to last. Actually, God's going to take you out of the picture as well. And there's another nation is going to come and take you over. And he prophesies the destruction of the nations. And this first two-thirds is dire reading. I mean, it's really heavy going. It isn't easy. But then he changes tone. And in the last third of the book of Ezekiel, the prophecies turn back to Israel about their future. And how God is going to restore Israel, the people, to Israel, the land. And it becomes a really encouraging book. So if you can stay with the first two-thirds, you get to the good bit later. No, it's all good bits, but you know what I mean. It's an encouragement. Sorry, can you go back for a minute? That's right. So Ezekiel 37 is a chapter within the restoration of Israel to the land. Okay? Thank you. Sorry, beg your pardon. So now as we come to Ezekiel 37, we have a people who are in exile, a city destroyed, a temple desecrated, a prophet in exile. Ezekiel means, by the way, God is strong. That's his name, meaning. It means that. And there are two aspects to this prophecy in Ezekiel 37. It starts by saying, the hand of the Lord was on me. When that happens in Ezekiel, it means there's a picture coming. God is going to give Ezekiel a visual expression of a prophecy that he's going to make. Okay? But he also says, the Lord said to me. So there's an audible message. So there are two things to this chapter. The first is the picture, the dry bones. The second is the message that God is giving to help him understand what it means. So he not only gives him the picture of it, he tells him the meaning of it, which doesn't always happen in Old Testament prophecy. But this time it does. Aren't we just fortunate? Thank you. Then we don't have to interpret for ourselves, because God tells us what it means. So, we're into Ezekiel 37. The Spirit of the Lord took Ezekiel to a valley. Got to remember, at this point, I want to be really clear, this is not an imagination. This is not Ezekiel lying on his bed, dreaming a dream. It says the Spirit of the Lord took Ezekiel and he put him into a valley. It's the second time he's done that. Ezekiel 1 is another valley. But in Ezekiel 1, it's a lush valley. It's a green, pleasant land valley. This one is a valley which has scorched earth. It's dry. It's barren. It's hot. It's desolate. And spread across this valley are bones, human bones. They're not skeletons, they're bones. And even the bones are bleached. This is a horrific place to be. It's the site of a previous battlefield where the dead have been left where they are. And the vultures have come, and the animals have come, and they've eaten the flesh, and they've taken it all. And the sun has beaten day after day onto the bones, and they've bleached, and the marrow's gone. This is a desolate, dry, dead place. And the bones are scattered. The animals have scattered the bones, so it's not even known skeletons anymore. And God says to Ezekiel, can these bones live? And Ezekiel is a very wise man, and he doesn't take the place of God. And he says, Sovereign Lord, you alone know. I'm not buying that one. Because if he says yes, he's this fantastic man of faith. If he says no, and God thinks they can, he's lost again. This man's on a loser. So he says, well, actually, I'm not going to answer that. Lord, you know. And that's right. And the lesson is that the prophet is the messenger only. Remember this. Whenever you read the Old Testament, or even the New Testament, part of the Testament, the prophet is a messenger. The prophet is not saying what should happen. The prophet is saying what God is saying should happen. So he doesn't take the place of God here. All right? Sovereign Lord, you alone know. Thank you. So there are three distinct prophecies in this chapter. The first is to prophesy to the bones. Now, this is crazy, isn't it? This is crazy. But God says to him, prophesy to the bones. And the prophecy is that the bones should hear the word of the Lord. That's what it's saying. That's the prophecy. So Ezekiel, God says to Ezekiel, tell him to hear the words of the Lord. Hear the words of the Lord. And the bones start moving. And along the ground, the bones move. And they move to what become visibly skeletons. And not only that, but the tendons reappear. And the sinews reappear. And the flesh comes on it. And the flesh is covered by skin. And suddenly, you have on the ground which was before just this valley of dry scattered bones, bodies. Recognizable bodies. Lying on the ground. Dead. No life. Dead, but recognizable. Second prophecy is to prophesy to the breath. We're going to come to breath in a minute. We'll explain the breath in a second or two, because it comes a little bit later in the session. So prophesy to the breath. In other words, these are lifeless bodies. There's nothing there. So he doesn't prophesy to the bodies, he prophesies to the wind. And he says, bring life. And across this valley, this scorched earth valley, comes a breath. And the bodies start to live. The heart starts to beat. The breath starts to happen. And they stand up now because they're living. They're a living body. And they stand up a vast army, it says in verse 10. This is the army that had been killed, that had died, that had been scattered. And now they're standing on their feet, a vast army, living and breathing. And then he says, you prophesy to the people. Say to this people who are now standing up, I'm going to take you home. In exile, 70 years, I'm going to take you home. So prophesy to the people, I'm going to restore you to the land that you came in. And verse 14 is probably the summary verse. So let me just read verse 14, because it gives you then the whole story. And now we're going to look at its meaning. I will put my spirit in you, says the Lord, and you will live. And I will settle you in your own land. Then you will know that I, the Lord, have spoken, I've done it, declares the Lord. Got it? This is the whole purpose of the issue. Because these people, God says, are the people of Israel. He says to Ezekiel in the chapter, these people are the people of Israel, Ezekiel. Understand what you're seeing. That I am going to do something with this people that is special. I'm going to take them home. That's the story. That's the vision. That's the picture and its meaning for the people of Israel in 600 BC. So we're fine, aren't we? Except we're not really. Because what do you do with a story like that in, what are we, 2012 AD? Here we go. We need to be careful. We need to be careful that we don't just assume some things about Old Testament prophecy and just dump it on ourselves and say, of course, it means this for us. So we need to be a little bit careful. We do understand, and I'm sure you probably do as well, that Old Testament prophecy can be fulfilled more than once. I mean, there's lots of illustrations of that. If we had time, we'd go into all kinds of illustrations. We don't have time, so I won't. But you can have first, second, third time of fulfillment of prophecy. And they're all legitimate. It's fine. So we need to be a little bit careful. First of all, we don't misapply it. And secondly, that we don't apply it at all. I mean, you know, you say, well, it's 600 years BC, it happened then, it was for those people, no meaning for me today at all. That's not true either. But we need to be careful we don't misapply it, because that's the danger with prophecy. So here we go, we can ask some questions, because there are three things, aren't there, that this brings out. One is, hear the word of the Lord. So hearing is an issue. Life is an issue. Life instead of death. And land is an issue about what is home. Where is home for us? So we're going to look at the three of them, if that's all right, very quickly. What or who are we listening to? If you look at Ezekiel, if you go back two books, you go into Jeremiah. Jeremiah, if you remember, prophesied about the same time as Ezekiel, just a little bit before, but they did overlap a bit. Let me read Jeremiah 13 for you. Because this is a really interesting thought that God has about his people. So Jeremiah 13:9, let me read this. This is what the Lord says. In the same way, I will ruin the pride of Judah and the great pride of Israel, of Jerusalem. These wicked people, this is his own people now he's talking to, these wicked people who refuse to listen to my words, who follow the stubbornness of their hearts and go after other gods to serve and worship them, will be like this belt, and he has a belt around his waist, completely useless. It's not holding his garment up. It's a useless belt. For as a belt is bound round a man's waist, so I bound the whole house of Israel and the whole house of Judah to me, declares the Lord, to be my people for my renown and praise and honour. But they haven't listened. So the judgment of God on the people of Israel before the exile was they weren't listening to him. They were his people. They were meant to be his people. They were meant to bring honour and renown and praise and glory to God. But they weren't listening. So I think it's very significant that just a few days, years later, when these bones are lying on the ground, they're scattered, and it's the people, a picture of the people of Israel, this is who they are, God says, prophesy to them, hear the word of the Lord. Listen, will you? Have you learnt the lesson yet, people of Israel? Listen to the Lord. And I think, you see, we can have some questions here, can't we? Who are you listening to? Who are you listening to? There's a lot of voices in our culture and our society. There's a lot of people telling us a lot of things that are important. And it's very important about, well, you can just probably go through them better than I can. But there's a lot of things that we're being told to listen to. And I suppose the question is, what priority do we give to listening to the Lord? Hear the words of the Lord, said the prophet. I suppose we can say to ourselves today, we need to hear the word of the Lord. Because whatever we listen to shapes us as to who we are, how we think, how we behave, how we react, how we speak. What we listen to shapes that. There's this lovely passage in Jeremiah. Jeremiah is he's a hard prophet, but he's a great guy. Is it Jeremiah 18, 1 to 6? Listen to this. This is the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. And he's told him, visual picture again. Are you ready? This is another visual picture. Go down to the potter's house, and there I'll give you my message. So I went down to the potter's house, and I saw him working at the wheel. But the pot he was shaping from the clay was marred in his hands. So the potter formed it into another pot, shaping it as seemed best to him. Then the word of the Lord came to me, O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter does, declares the Lord? Like clay in the hand of the potter, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel. So who's shaping you? Who are you allowing to shape you? Doesn't mean you never read anything else or ever listen to anything else than the Bible. But it's who are you allowing to shape you? What is the priority that you're giving to the word of the Lord, quote unquote, the Bible that we know today, to allow it to shape us into who we are and how we think? And that's a massive question. Who are we listening to? Thank you. Then you come to life. The chapter before Ezekiel 37, is Ezekiel 36. Well, you'd expect that, wouldn't you? But Ezekiel 36 is a wonderful chapter because it's in this idea of restoration of the people of Israel. I'm going to the New Testament. I need to go back into the old, don't I? Ezekiel 36, there's these lovely verses in Ezekiel 36 about God giving them a new heart. He says, a new heart I'll give you, a new spirit I'll put within you, and I'll take out of your flesh the heart of stone, and I'll give you a heart of flesh that you may know me. And these bodies, when they come together on the ground, were dead. And they needed life. They needed something that would give them life. And it's the Ruach of God. It's the breath of God. The wind of God. The Ruach is the Spirit of God in the Old Testament. The Ruach is the Old Testament word for the Spirit of God. And we see it first in Genesis when it hovered over the Spirit of God moved over the waters. The Ruach of God. It's a lovely word, you get your tongue around it. But it's the idea that God moves and he brings life as he moves. And in this valley of bodies now, dead bodies that have come together after the first prophecy, God's Spirit moved over the valley and brought life to the bodies. And they stood up a vast army. Well, I mean, what's the application today for us? How do we view that today? Well, actually, we're dead, but we're the living dead, aren't we? We're the living dead. We're not lying on the ground lifeless in the sense of not breathing, but we're... The Bible describes us as the living dead. It says there's no life in us until God's Spirit moves over and brings life. His life in us. Great question to ask, you know. Have you ever experienced the Spirit of God move in your life, touch your life, move across your life, and bring life to you? Because if you haven't, it's an enormous issue. It's an enormous thing to have to deal with. You need to think about it. You need to listen to what God is saying and allow his Ruach. New Testament, it's pneuma. It's okay. Pneuma is a kind of a softer word. Allow the pneuma of God, the Spirit of God, to move over your life and bring life. It brings a new pardon, a new knowledge of God, a new sensitiveness of God. Because verse 12 says that as the Ruach of God moved over, the graves opened and the Spirit gave them life. They came out again. They lived again. And we can live again. That in itself brings some questions. So here's a couple of questions for you. What has happened in your life recently that wouldn't have happened if the Spirit of God hadn't already brought life to you? There you go. There's a question for you to think about over lunch today. So, you know, we say, oh, God's given me life. So the next question is, God says, so what? Where's the difference? What's happened to you recently that wouldn't have happened if God hadn't have brought that life to you? Being it really nitty-gritty, you could ask about the church, couldn't you? Sorry about this, guys. What happened at Pont Prenai recently? Highfields, we are Highfields Pont Prenai, aren't we? What happened at Highfields Pont Prenai recently that wouldn't have happened if God's Spirit hadn't been with us? Where's the touch of the supernatural in people's lives that you're seeing or not seeing? So you can ask it individually, we can ask it corporately, but it's about the breath of God. It's about the Spirit of God bringing life to that which was dead. Individually, corporately. I can ask the questions, but I can't answer them for you. Answer them for me. Can't answer them for you. You need to do that. Okay, here we go. Here's the third one. The land. So the people's conclusion in verse 11 of 37 is, our hope is gone and we're cut off. That's what they were saying. Jeremiah, years before, had said, you're going to go into exile, but God will bring you back after 70 years. They just didn't hear it. So now, years into exile, there have been children born in exile who've never known Israel as a land. They've been born that way. They didn't know. They said, our hope is gone. We have no hope. We're cut off from our own land. There's no place of belonging. They didn't understand. They didn't listen to the promise of return. But God graciously, in Ezekiel 37, gave them an understanding that he would bring them back by making them and restoring to a people again. His people. A vast army. He would take them back to Israel. Where's home for you? Where's the land for you? Hebrews 11:13. Need to read this to you. We've got about 2 minutes. All right, I'll be finished very soon. Here we go. Hebrews 11:13. Listen to this. All these people were still living by faith when they died. They didn't receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed from a distance. They admitted they were aliens and strangers on earth. People who say such things show they're looking for a country of their own. If they'd been thinking of the country they'd left, they'd have an opportunity to return. Instead, they were longing for a better country, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. Where's home for you? Cardiff? Is it really? Is it really? Because there's a big question coming here. Thank you. It's not just the provision of a city in the future, but a restoration of hope for today. We need to get hold of this. This is not our home. It really isn't. There is a hope. They said our hope is gone. Do you feel, I mean, I don't know you. I don't know some of you very well. But do you feel like hope is gone? There is no future for you? It's not true. It really isn't true. There is a hope. The people of Israel returned to Jerusalem in 536 BC. They did go back 70 years to the day God took them back. Actually, there were three returns. The first one went 70 years to the day. God did that. And actually, if you come to the New Testament, in John 14, Jesus says to his followers, I've gone to prepare a place for you. I will come back and take you to be with me. There's the hope. There's the land. There's the country. And there's the home. And it isn't here. It's there. With him. So if you're going through a difficult time, if it's tough for you right now, it doesn't make your circumstances any better here. What it does, it focuses us on the future, that there is a future, there is a hope. Because just as God promised it to Israel and he did it, Jesus promised it to us and he'll do it. So you have the three, don't you? Here, life and land. Listen to the word of the Lord. Accept the life the Spirit brings to you. And our future is a home with him.